On a show that talks about time traveling Bigfoot and alien sex cults, this is serious journalism, people.
Serious.
This time we mean it.
If you think that there are not birds that are not real, you're a moron.
At this point, I'm not throwing these weirdos out because maybe they're telling the truth.
Why does everything have to be a hidden conspiracy where the motives aren't really clear? Where you can't tell what someone's intentions are from their words? Why, Abby, why?
I feel like you're just not answering the question.
There is a pattern here that is definitive, and this leads us to the CEO's response, which is not the way that you want to play being accused of in a conspiracy theory.
If jet fuel can melt steel beams, why can't it melt passports?
I'm just thinking to myself, like, who thinks like this? Oh, the United States government thinks like this. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Conspiracy Pilled Season 4, Episode 2, The Copper Scroll Project with Jim Barfield. I'm your host, PJ Williams, and with me tonight is not Abby Libby.
Not Abby.
We should just call you, just not Abby.
Yes, just hashtag not Abby.
Not Abby. We'll get that trending on Twitter, guys. Do your work. Yes. This is my sister, Elise, who you guys are familiar with. So she's been on the show a few times. We've done some stuff together. And last year, we got into talking about the Ark of the Covenant. Obviously, it's 10 months ago, I guess. So season 2, episode 9, the Ark of the Covenant has been found, ? And the reason I bring this episode up is because we're going to be continuing some of the work that we laid down in that episode and some of the work that Elise and I laid down on Quirks of Creation with the Ron White episode.
On the Ark, yes.
Yes. So we have a fantastic guest tonight, Jim Barfield. But again, if you're confused about the Ark of the Covenant and some of the stuff we laid down, go back. We'll try to explain it in brief. But essentially, we brought up two main theories about the Ark of the Covenant. One is that the Temple Institute believes that it's buried underneath the Dome of the Rock. And the other one is that 2 Maccabees tells us that Jeremiah, the prophet, hid the Ark and a bunch of things away in caves outside of Jerusalem. I'm sorry if I'm messing this up. Jim's sitting behind the scenes for a second, probably going like, this guy's an idiot. But we'll bring
I just saw him smack his forehead. So he might explain it
and tell me where I'm wrong and where I'm not very intelligent. But before we bring Jim on, I have to thank all of the wonderful local supporters who come over and make this show possible. So if you guys want a bonus weekly episode, you can come over to conspiracypill.locals.com. People ask us a lot what that is. It's like Patreon, except Patreon, if they don't like what you say, will just take away your income, just like PayPal, just like a lot of these things that we're trying to move away from. This is why we're so adamant about Rumble. This is why we're so adamant about Locals, because they're actually fighting for us to be able to say the things that we want to. So we've got a lot of new supporters over there. We have... And I know you guys, if I start reading these names, you guys are going to start coming up with more ridiculous names because I have to say them on air now. We got Tiggle Biddies, Insane, I know, Insane 621, Astra Econ, JP Sanchez 2, and Quinberly, all new monthly supporters. We have Stone Law, who's a one-time supporter for 3 months. And then we have Conspiracy Wah, Patmo, Scotty Dog, Cosmic Midnight, and That Canadian Guy 23, who came over and got a yearly subscription to our Locals channel. And again, if you do the yearly, you get 2 months for free that way. So it's a really good deal. So enough about what I have to say. Jim Barfield, welcome to Conspiracy Pilled. How are you doing?
Oh, thank you very much. I'm doing really well, doing much better. I was feeling kind of under the weather earlier today, but it's really getting much better. Thank you very much.
If you had gotten any more sick and then it's you and Abby just like on the same day, I'd have been sitting here just talking to myself. So I'm glad that you're weathering it, that you're here, and that Elise is filling in. But yeah, no, Jim, you have such an interesting story, and I want to get into it and ask you all kinds of questions. And we talked a little bit before the show. I just want to go through a couple of, vocabulary terms, I think, for people who maybe are not as familiar with like the Nag Hammadi and the Dead Sea Scrolls and things like that. And then I want to get into like what you've discovered. So first of all, let me just ask you, what are the Dead Sea Scrolls? What is the Copper Scroll? Like, how does this all relate? Why is this stuff important, I guess?
Well, the biggest reason that's important, we'll try to get into it later, is sure. Place for all these Dead Sea Scrolls in particular. The Nag Hammadi Library is very interesting. I don't study it near as much as I do the Dead Sea Scrolls. They are my focus, but they're important. I think they're very important to see what's going on with the people that were in Egypt and an area with the Nag Hammadi Library. But for the Qumran, that's only like 13 miles from Jerusalem. Mm-hmm. And another interesting thing about that is Qumran is it's like a Jerusalem in the wilderness. I don't know if you were well aware of that, but it was designed, it was built with they found an area where there was the correct valleys or wadis is more like it for there, so that it would look just like Jerusalem. And they put all the markers, the Copper Scroll, and we'll get into it later, it tells you where to find all these artifacts. And they reference specific points that relate to not only Qumran, but in Jerusalem as well. So my focus is the Dead Sea Scrolls, because guys, listen, I'm telling you, that place is the home of the prophets of Israel. Mm-hmm. And I will stand on that all day long. And if you want to know things, those are the guys to go to. And we'll get into that a little bit more and go a little deeper into what the importance of those guys were.
Right, right. So it was, correct me if I'm wrong, but it was, I think, 1947 or 48 that they found the Dead Sea Scrolls. And these are all of the books of the Old Testament, except for Esther, apparently, plus some other stuff. Am I getting that right?
Yeah, that's exactly okay. Right. All the books of the Bible, except for the book of Esther, mm-hmm. have been identified. And they're still digging. They're still looking. And there's a very good possibility that you're going to find those documents later on in a cave somewhere that they has been. Has,
did we lose Jim?
Access it. But
I think we lost you for a second. Will you repeat that last part real quick? Was it me? Sorry. Go ahead. So I don't know what we lost, but you were talking about how they found all of the. Everything except Esther. They're still digging. What else have they found, and how did they come across the Copper Scroll? And what is that exactly?
I think the only document of any real significance, rather than just tiny fragments, it was the entire document. Mm-hmm. And then there were some rotted places on it, obviously, but they found that one in 1952.
Okay.
What's wonderful about it, it was found, thank goodness, it was found professional archaeological team, that they took the time to be incredibly careful with it, because it's so fragile. It would be like burying a penny in the ground for 2,000 years and then expecting it not to be brittle. It's going to be incredibly brittle. Well, that's the way with this Copper Scroll, and the Copper Scroll is not as nearly as thick as a penny. They hammered each letter, each word in it, and they had to write it backwards on the Copper Scroll, so that when you flip it over, you can see the words protruding from the document and read it from that direction. So they took a lot of time and meticulously tapped all this information into that document. And the reason they did that in copper, they wanted it to last for 2,000 years or more. And it did. It lasted so far about 2,400 years.
Wow. Yeah. That's incredible. Yeah, so it's one document. What does the document list or say exactly?
In the very beginning, it says, under the ruins in the Valley of Achor. And as I got up one morning early, and I met this nice gentleman and his wife, Fendel Jones, and sat down, and I decided to try my hand at figuring out what the scroll said, because I didn't understand what his or his interpretation was. Didn't make sense to me. So I sat down early one morning, and it was in December of 2006. I started reading it, and I looked at it. It said, under the ruins in the Valley of Achor. So I knew where the Valley of Achor was at. That's where Qumran sits. It sits in the very southern end of the Valley of Achor, and it's a the ruins I was familiar with because I've been studying the Dead Sea Scrolls for years by that point. But I wasn't interested in the Copper Skull. Had no interest in it. I read it. It was about gold, silver, and gems. Big deal. You know, there's a lot of spiritual stuff I can find out from the rest of the Dead Sea Scrolls. The one thing that this guy, Vendel Jones, I went to study with him over a weekend. He was the Copper Scroll guy of the day. He said, no, Jim, you don't understand. The Copper Scroll is far, far more important than what you can imagine. And he was right. He was right. If I'm right and I've discovered how to understand this, I have found 57 locations of incredibly important temple treasures. And most importantly to me and to many others that are biblically minded, if I'm right about a specific cave, inside of that cave is going to be scrolls, complete scrolls that have been put into jars and sealed to protect them from the humidity, what very little humidity there is at Qumran.
Right.
And they will give us information like we have never, it'd be like digging up Alexandria.
The Library of Alexandria, yeah.
Only into completely intact.
Yeah.
That's going to be enormous.
Yeah, that is absolutely incredible. So I'm sure people are listening are like, well, okay, so Jim, who is this guy? Like, was he an archaeologist, a biblical scholar? Did he teach this and that? But before 2006, you were a firefighter, a fire investigator, is that correct?
Yeah, I did fire investigations for my hometown here in Oklahoma, Lawton, Oklahoma. And I really liked fire investigation. I didn't like going out and enforcing codes because I really made teachers angry and owners of restaurants because I got to make sure they're safe.
Yeah.
But the investigation part of it, I loved it. And I excelled at that because, and I kind of mentioned this earlier when we were off there, I used the techniques that I used for Bible study to figure out the fire investigations. It's the same technique. You know, you be very precise. You be very meticulous on what you find and don't let anything go by the wayside. Let me tell you something kind of strange about these archaeologists. They're nice guys. I know several of them. They're nice guys, but they have this strange idea. You can't read another text. Like if you find another text from, 1 BC, you can't use it to confirm another text. It's weird. And I said, guys, whenever we did a fire investigation, if there was a little boy that came up and said, Mr. Fireman, I saw what happened, I'm going to bend the knee, get down there and say, tell me what you saw, little buddy. And let him tell, because he doesn't do like parents do, or, guys want to be firefighters. They will tell you, yeah, there was, I saw it all. And then they go into their, what they imagine. That little boy has no imagination about that kind of stuff. He just tells you what he saw.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, they throw out a lot of information that would lead you to the conclusions that I made. And I don't know why they do that, but bless their hearts, I'm glad they did, because they made it possible for me to do it.
There you go.
See, go ahead, Elise.
Well, yeah, I think we're going to say the same thing. We were talking about this a few days ago, that people just over, when it's something so simple, and then they come in with all these technicalities and other stuff that make it so overcomplicated. And also, like you're saying, throwing out things that would help them. You just kept like, what? Somebody who's not in that field, I guess you see it more clearly. I don't know, but it seems silly to me.
Yeah, this is literally my favorite part of this whole story, because again, we're told constantly to trust the experts, and the experts, at least in our field of what we're constantly talking about, are the ones who are overlooking the obvious, the ones who are overcomplicating the simple, and they're the ones who are constantly getting things wrong all the time. But we have this and it's pushed on us by media and everybody else that like there are people with PhDs and the people with PhDs know all of science has been answered, all of history and archaeology has been answered, and someone who's simple and just cares to read the Bible and cares to study couldn't possibly come to a simple conclusion about a document and what it says. But like that's what you did, and that's why I find this so compelling. Over like this is why the story makes sense to me. I know other people will listen to your story and they'll say this guy's a firefighter. He sits down, he says that he understands a scroll that 50 years of archaeology didn't uncover. How does this happen? But to me, I'm thinking, no, this is exactly how it would happen, right? I think it's funny.
It is very funny. I have got. Guys with PhDs that were fuming. They were fuming about me. Mm-hmm. My wife called me when I was in Israel the first time doing our first excavation in 2009. She said, Jimmy, there's a guy on the web. I'm going to kill him. And she, what's the matter? She said, this guy's calling you everything but a white man. I said, well, I'm not. And she was just, I said, Laurie, you got to get ready for this. They're going to attack me. They're going to do this kind of thing. You just got to get ready for it. But he was angry, and he was telling them that I didn't want to talk about, that I was making stuff up, that I was doing it all for money. He just went on and on and on. If we do, in fact, make a discovery, I'm going to lean forward at a camera at one of those press conferences, and I'm going to tell him, hey, Bubba, you know what liable means?
Yes. I love that.
I wouldn't do that. I want bygones to be bygones, but it really was. And what it is that they put so much of their schooling into it. Mm-hmm. That's where they made the mistakes. Just read it, what it says, do what it says, and you find the answer. It's that simple.
Right.
Under the runes, I thought, okay, what runes are they talking about? Well, the only ones that I'm really familiar with are Qumran. So I go to Qumran, I grabbed a map. It was sitting right there because I studied it so much. I laid it beside me, and I started reading. Under the ruins of the Valley of Achor, at the steps heading east, 40 cubits of fine, 17 talents of silver service vessels. And I thought, okay. There's only one set of steps here that go east. And I thought, let me do a measurement on it. And I found a book. Luckily, it was the guy that helped me with the excavation, Yuval Peleg and Yitzhak Magen. I looked at it, and I went to that particular pool that they were talking about. Guess what? It was about the width of my finger short of 40 cubits, exactly.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, my gosh, that's coincidence. I mean, at that stage, you got to think coincidence.
Right.
But then the next one, I found it right away. I'm not kidding. Within 5 minutes, I found the first one. Within 20 minutes, I found the first five.
Oh, my word.
That's crazy. That's just crazy. And they haven't changed to this day. I haven't revised it or anything like that. They were not. So again, my point is just read it for what it says and go with it from that direction.
Right. And it sounds like you're reading a treasure map, but that's what it literally is. I just love that as you say it, it sounds straight out of a book or a movie or something. So this is late 2006. What's the thing you do after you realize that you've kind of cracked the code on this, you know, billions of dollars worth of treasure in Israel? Because that's what it is, right? It's many billions of dollars worth of gold and silver.
Many billions of dollars.
Right.
I mean, let me give you an example. The second one that I went to read, and I'm not going to quote it exactly, but it said that there was 900 talents of pure gold at a specific spot. I'm thinking, okay, how much is a talent? Do you guys have a clue how much it is? And I'd be surprised and proud of you if you did know.
It's 70 pounds, 70, roughly, right?
70, 75 pounds.
Okay.
With that amount of weight, you divide that into pounds. Then you divide that by 15 or multiply that by 15 or 14. You got to get troy ounces before you start calculating. The value of that one spot alone is almost $2 billion at today's price.
Jeez. And that's one of 57 spots. Wow.
Yeah. I'm gonna put a Joe Biden on you.
Now you gotta wander. Now when the podcast ends, you have to wander around, not sure how to like exit. If you're gonna,
get out of my living room here.
Your wife will have to rush in and like, you know, squirt you off the stage.
Come on, let's go.
Do a full Joe Biden impression. So again, end of 2006, you figure this out. What's your next steps? Do you call someone? Do you go to Israel? What's the plan?
What do you do with it?
What I did.
Take a shovel and just.
You know what? It was tempting.
Yeah.
Because listen, that place is out in the middle of nowhere. It's right off of Highway 90, I believe, and it's open. You could walk, go up one of the wadis and walk up to these places. But if God can keep it hidden for 400 years, He can handle it for a few more months or a few more years while we get everything ready for what's coming. Mm-hmm. I believe that with all my heart. So He's the one that's been protecting it. I was really nervous. Especially whenever I started figuring out, oh my gosh, I know where all this stuff is, except for maybe one location. I can't figure out where it's at. But that's so much money, just that one location.
Right.
And it would take a good digger with a good shovel, probably take them about, 6 hours to get it all dug up.
Wow.
That's how simple all this is. Yeah. And then let me take it one step further, and then I'll tell you what I did. Location number three, it's a buried cave. And why they say buried is, it sounds like what the guys at Qumran did is they plastered over the entrance and sealed it shut, which is really, really smart. Mm-hmm. And they sealed it, and then they took dirt, and they just kept dumping dirt and dirt and dirt and dirt until they made it look like a slope going up to the very top of the opening.
Mm-hmm.
Gotcha. Very smart. They even built a retaining wall down below it so that it wouldn't wash out and, open up on its own.
Right.
So what we did is I wanted to go check it out. And I told Laurie, I said, and we were living on a firefighter's retirement income, which was a lot of money.
Right.
But I talked to her about this. I said, I really want to just do my research and my study, biblical study. She said, we'll live. Go ahead, retire, and let's try this. Well, we did. And oh my gosh, we headed out for Israel. Here's what she had. I had my backpack. She had her backpack. That's it. And we headed for Israel. We had just enough money, extra money, that we could buy two tickets to Israel. And we went there and we checked everything out that I had at that point. We made the first discovery in December of 2006. By 2007, February 14th, somewhere in there, around the...
Valentine's Day. don't let your wife hear you floundering on that one. Might as well not remember your anniversary.
That's my time, so I tried to buy her anything. Just come with me.
Yeah.
We checked my research. By that point, I had about 15 of them, or a little bit less than that, figured out. And we checked it. Everything that I hoped was there was there.
Oh, my word.
It was just crazy, and I'm thinking, how did these guys with a PhD not recognize this and see that it was so obvious to me as I was doing it that I couldn't believe it? So we began to search. No one had figured out what I found. It was amazing.
That's incredible.
That is crazy. Yeah, for sure. So you go there, and what's the next step after this?
After I got there and I really realized, okay, this is not a joke. This is real.
Yeah.
I sat down at my computer, and let me tell you how I did it. So all those guys out there that want to do some investigation, I encourage you. I got a copy of the Copper Scroll. It was a facsimile. Mm-hmm. Had all the letters, in the exact form, exact shape, everything. and I had the whole document. Well, I took a copper sheet about the same size as the actual document, and I laid it on. I had it, took it to a Staples, and I had it blown up to the original size, and then I put it on a rubber mat, and I used that format, and I pressed it in with a stylus into the copper. It was thin enough that I could do that, and I did the entire copper scroll that way. Still got it to this day. And that's how I began to find it. And what I did is I took each letter and replaced it with a new letter right below it. I didn't replace it, but right below it, I put all the newest, the new fonts, the ones that are easier to understand to see. And then I went to, you guys ever heard of a Strong's Concordance?
Yeah. Yeah. We've used it a few times for different studies and stuff.
Back in the day, those were like, they were awesome. But they're little tiny Hebrew letters.
And
I'm getting older, getting a little more blind. So I'm going, and I take each word, I find each word, and I plug it in until I get a sentence. And then I read it. Then I look at the map, and I do what it says, and I begin to find them left and right. I was finding all these locations. And I'm thinking, oh, my gosh. And my grandkids were living with me at the time. My grandson, Seth, and Jubilee were living with me. And they, I would get so excited each time I found one of them. That I would hoop, I got it. And my grandson turned to my wife, and he said, Nana, he said, are you letting Paul drink way too much coffee? And that's a true story.
That's
what I did. The next section of this was the finalizing the copper scroll research. It's about 290 pages or something like that. Anyway, it's a lot of research that went into that.
A lot.
Right.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. So, do you have a question, Elise?
Well, just how did you even know where to go with the information you'd found? Does that matter? Because I think I would be like, so lost even at that point, I found all this, but I don't know who to talk to.
how do you get because eventually you did get a hold of Peleg, I believe, and you started an excavation. How did that come about?
The first guy that I went to after Laurie and I got to Israel that first go around, a guy named Gershon Solomon. He was the leader of the Temple Mount Faithful, I think that's what the group was. Wonderful man. And he really was excited about what I was doing, but he kept reminding me, Jimmy, don't do this on your own. Make sure you got Israelis with you, because he was protective, very protective of it. And I said, of course. Then after that, I thought, well, I've got to start spreading the word that I got this. So I was teaching for a Comanche Nation college. Matter of fact, it used to be on my grade school, but they turned it into a Comanche Nation college for the Comanche tribe here in my area. I go in, and the guys are, talking to me. They find out about the Copper Scroll Project. Well, the assistant director of the school wants me to do a brown bag lunch. Now, this is part of the story. I said, of course, I'll do that. I like talking about it. So I get up there, and I go through my spiel, and then she invites me into her office afterwards, and she says, Jimmy, come in here. And I sit down in front of her. She's got a nice big desk, and she says, I think I can help you with your project. And I'm going, okay.
Right.
A little Comanche lady, has no Hebrew background. I said, Juanita, how are you going to help me with my project? She said, I know a guy that works with the Antiquities Authority.
I said, okay.
I said, and I'm looking at her, she's talking, and she's telling this. And please excuse me, ladies, but it was a woman's story. It went over here, it went around this way, and it got
And you're like, sure, you know the Antiquities Authority, right? Yeah.
Well, I said, Juanita. I said, is he a janitor? How did you get? She said, well, I married a Jewish man. I converted to Judaism. We live here at Fort Sill, of course, a lot in Fort Sill. It was the largest artillery post in the world. It's right out here, about 15 miles from here. She said, we used to invite Israelis, foreign students, Israeli students, to live with us, or, you know, we'd help them get set up at the home with the apartments, whatever they needed.
Wow.
And she said, and we met this guy by the name of Shuka Dorfman. I said, oh, and I stopped and said, what was his name? She said, Shuka Dorfman. She said, he's the head of the Antiquities Authority today. I said, oh my gosh, she knew him. And I said, can you set it up where I can visit with him? She said, of course I can. I'll call his wife first and she'll make him do it. And she did. She called, her name was Talma. She called Talma and they set it up. Anyway, 2 weeks later, maybe three, me and my buddy Chris Knight, we head for Israel just to visit with Shuka Dorfman, the head of the Antiquities Authority of Israel. And he sits down in front of me. And here's, let's see, Chris Knight was over here. Shuka Dorfman was over here, and I'm sitting in front of him. I got my research laying on the table. When he's talking to me, he flew fixed wing. I flew helicopters for the Army. He was in the artillery. I was in the artillery. We went down there. It was nice.
Yeah.
But then he turned. He stops and he said, Mr. Barfield, what is it you want me to do for you? I said, it's not what I want you to do for you. I said, it's what I want to do for you.
Yeah.
And he said, oh, that scares me. And I said, and I said, okay. But he said, just, I tell you what, let's do. We're here. He said, let me see your research. And I said, okay. So I opened up my document. I opened it up to the portion that does the disclosure, tells you where everything that, and I slide it in front of him. Now you got to picture this. He's leaning back in his chair and he says, I say to him, under the ruins in the Valley of Accord, go through all that, and I go to the first location, but the steps are, you know, 40 cubits long. And he stops and goes, he leans forward, and then I do the next one, the 900 cubits or 900 talents. Then he kind of leans up. I do the next one, and he's pulling it in front of him and looking at it. But when I got to the fourth one, he just threw his hands in there. The fourth one is the most detailed, most obvious that's the location that the document is talking about. You can't miss it.
So the hardest one for them to find.
Oh, but it's the most detailed. Perfect. Yeah. He said, Mr. Barfield, just a minute. He reaches in his briefcase, a leather bag, and he's talking on the phone in Hebrew. Like, I don't speak Hebrew. I don't know what he's saying. So people say, how did you figure out the copper scroll if you can't read Hebrew? Because I got a concordance.
I can do that myself.
Yeah, you can do it. You can do it. Well, he turns to me, he said, Mr. Barfield, he said, could you be back here on, I think it was a Tuesday. This was Friday, just before Shabbat. And I said, well, I'm a bit busy, but I can be here.
Let me check my schedule. Yeah. You have your people call my people.
Oh, it was crazy. Yeah. We walked out of there, me and Chris, we were dancing because he's my bud. And we went back, and that's when we met Yitzhak Magen and Yuval Pele. Yitzhak Magen was over the entire West Bank and the Gaza Strip. For any antiquities, he was the guy that was over it. And Yuval Pele was the archaeologist that was over Qumran. So he was the guy that I had to deal with. He was the main guy. And here I am, you know, just a couple of weeks after I meet this little Indian lady, she's got me visiting with this guy. Well, wow. He liked it. Yuval Pele, he really liked what he was seeing. He was going, okay. And he's trying not to, you know, he was trying to use a poker face, but he was failing miserably. And in Hebrew, he tells Shuka Dorfman, the head of the Antiquities Authority, he said, I think this guy's done it. And Shuka turns around and said, well, tell him. He said, no. He said, I want to hear more of this. So he keeps asking me questions. And of course, I just tell him what he needed to know. We stopped the meeting. They wanted to meet with me again. And we all shook hands and, you know, said all the nice things you're supposed to say. Then I took my buddy Chris. Being an investigator, you always carry a recorder with you.
Mm-hmm.
I recorded the whole conversation. And I took that conversation and I took it to a rabbi that was doing radio programs out of Jerusalem. I took it to him. I'd already met him. And that's a long story to itself. I'd already met him. And we'd all already planned this. And he was listening to it as we were replanning it again. He's holding on to it and listening. He said, oh, my gosh. And he yanks the headphones off. He said, you know what they said? I said, they think I'm crazy, right? He said, no. He said, they believe that you've done it. You figured out how to understand the copper scroll. Wow. Talk about validation.
Yeah.
A major validation for me. And a lot of research had gone into it at that point. So that was one of the biggest steps we made. What would you like to know from here?
Oh, wow. I've got so many questions and I'm trying not to jump ahead. I guess the question is, like, this is, you know, a huge discovery. They think you found it. You've got a hold of the people who are working in Qumran and can dig. Why do we not have the treasure? I guess is the next question for people who are not as familiar with the story. Like, that's where I think my mind would go is like, where is it? You know what I mean? Where's the treasure? Yeah.
Remember the guy that my wife wanted to beat up?
Yes. Yeah.
He was working for a university, had his PhD. Nothing against guys with PhDs, but he was the one that was insulting me, talked about my mom, my dad, everybody. He was just not a nice guy. And I won't tell you what people told me to call him, but he was just not a nice fella. Anyway, they were having a conference, and I think back east somewhere. And they were making posts, and they found out that we were in Israel excavating. On my research, guess what he does and a bunch of the other archaeologists? Hey, what are you guys doing working with this fireman from Lawton, Oklahoma? And it takes us forever to be able to get the permit to dig at Qumran, and you're helping him. They were furious.
Because you, as a fireman from Lawton, Oklahoma, couldn't possibly have figured something the PhDs hadn't figured out. That's
smart enough. That's just the way it is.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how arrogant these guys can be. Some of them are wonderful guys. Don't get me wrong. But when they're jerks, they're big time jerks.
Right.
And that's what happened is they shut us down. They called Yuval Peleg. They called his boss, Yitzhak Magen, and they shut us down. We had been promised to go 2 meters deep, which I think would have been sufficient at the cave to find out whether it was sealed or not. The ruins, which would have been sufficient, but it stopped. Now, was it God that stopped it, or was that old devil that stopped it? I think God stopped it. It was all great, and it was confirming for me, and it gave me the confidence that I needed, but it wasn't time. And I think time is now. It's coming. We are in a very special time in history where I believe that these things coming out of the ground are going to be very, very needed
right
for the temple, for all of that. You guys, people tell me, Jim, you don't need them. We won't be doing sacrifices. Well, you don't read your Bible because right. It says Zechariah 14, it says, there will be sacrifices. There will be doing all these things, all of it. So we are going to need those things. And I ask people when they tell me, well, sacrifice is bad. I said, well, what about when you do sacrifice? Mm-hmm. Well, we don't do sacrifice. That's right. The heck you don't. I said, you know what Turkey Day is? Yeah. What is it? Thanksgiving. I said, how do you think that turkey feels about that? When you slaughter him, roast him, and then pray over him, you're doing sacrifice. That animal is giving up his life to nourish you and proceed. Because the sacrifices were not these bloody, nasty messes that I thought they were until I started reading about it. They're incredibly clean. Kosher is incredibly clean.
Mm-hmm.
And they do a wonderful job with it. But that's the kind of issues I ran into even as close as a week ago, I get people that call me up and will write to me on my website. Oh my gosh. I know that there's at least six other places where the Ark of the Covenant's at. One of them, I think, is about two blocks from here.
Yeah, let's talk about that for a minute, because this is one of my favorite things is, you know, we went, I know your opinion already on this, but let's talk about it for a minute. We went through on our Ark of the Covenant episode, the whole Ethiopia thing. And I feel like in order to believe the Ethiopia thing, you have to believe this weird story from 700 years ago that Solomon decided to give his bastard son from the queen of some foreign country that he met once the keys to the kingdom and the Ark of the Covenant and all this stuff, which is just not in keeping with anything we know about the Ark of the Covenant. But that's the one that a lot of people bring up. And then we talked about the Temple Institute. And again, so where you're coming at this from is one of the other ones that we talked about, which is in 2 Maccabees. It says that Jeremiah, you want to tell that story a bit and maybe you're, am I getting it wrong? I just don't want to get it wrong, but it basically says that Jeremiah, the prophet, hid away the Ark of the Covenant. I think the tabernacle and a few other things because he knew that, Nebuchadnezzar was going to come and like take all their stuff. And it's not, these things are not in the inventory, and there's a very, you know, there's an inventory that lists everything, except it doesn't list the tabernacle, the Ark of the Covenant, and a couple of important things you think would be listed as either destroyed or taken. So that would back up that 2 Maccabees account. Am I getting that right? And that's what the copper scrolls is? Okay.
What the 2 Maccabees, 2nd chapter, you read in there, which says, they give his, spell his name Jeremy. It's Jeremiah. Mm-hmm. Jeremiah, with some other prophets, they took this stuff and they buried it in a cave when they were on their way to, depending on how you read it, when they were on their way to Mount Nebo. Well, the route from Jerusalem to Mount Nebo goes right past Qumran. And they found this cave. Well, they didn't find it. I mean, it was just like, it's about 390 meters from the northernmost tip of Qumran. That's not far. Right. And you find this cave. And it really looks like that it was, whoever did this, they buried the entrance. And that's what it says in Maccabees.
Mm-hmm.
They put some very, very important stuff in there. They put the entire tabernacle. Oh, my gosh. Now, if they put the tabernacle in there, I would think it would be logical and wise to put the ashes of the red heifer in there.
Right.
There's the big jar that they kept all this in. Every time they would do, I think this was this one, they do one in a few weeks. It will be the 10th red heifer to be sacrificed and burned and completely turned to ashes. Oh. If that's the case, they what I understand is they would mix the new sacrifice with the remaining ashes of the 10 and 9 before it. And they pour it in there and mix it up and make it into, that way it's got every single, you know, there's got to be remnants from each and every one of those throughout the centuries. So that's what I think will be inside of that cave is all kinds of text. That's the most important and the most exciting thing to me is there's going to be lots of text in there that's going to give us information. Now imagine this, picture this. We pull back the dirt, and if in fact there is a wall sealed there, inside of that wall, unless the earthquakes have been tremendous, and there's been a few earthquakes, if there's not too many earthquakes, that sand, that dust at Qumran, inside that cave, there will be footprints in there of Jeremiah, Hezekiah, Zechariah, Haggai. Guys, can you imagine?
No.
No.
I would money.
It gives me chills.
Oh, it gives me chills just thinking about it.
You,
that we're hoping for is there will be a jar sitting right outside the door without breaking into the seal. It'll be right outside the door, and we open that jar up, and it'll say, "Yo, Jimmy, be careful when you go in there, buddy. Be thinking pure thoughts. Don't think of anything stupid, and we won't try to you. I saw Indiana Jones. I know how it works."
Exactly, exactly.
So you said all that to say that you don't believe that the Ark of the Covenant's in Ohio or Arizona. Or, well, no, I'm just kidding.
You would believe the places that, people call.
Well, I would believe because we've researched. Yeah, no, I would believe because we've watched all of the videos and researched it. And we've, you know, we did the episode on where we thought the Ark of the Covenant was last year. And we've got all the responses. I mean, let's talk about the other big one, because you mentioned timing. And I want to get to timing. And I want to talk about the red heifers and the October attack and all of that stuff. But before we get to that, the other big one that people ask about a lot, and I know you've got some opinions on this, and we've talked about it before, is Ron Wyatt. And... well, I don't know. I mean, do you feel comfortable just giving your thoughts on kind of that whole thing? Because that was the number one response we got outside of the two that I already brought up, which is, well, the three. The obviously, we got the Ethiopia one. Then we got the Temple Institute, the Jeremiah story, and then it was Ron Wyatt. So those are the four main ones. What's your thoughts on the whole Ron Wyatt thing?
I really want to make sure people understand I have a lot of respect for Ron Wyatt.
Sure.
I think he did an amazing job, especially on the other projects that he had, Red Sea Crossing, the Ark, not the Ark of the Covenant, but the Ark.
The Ark.
Mm-hmm. So he did some really good work on that. But guys, I honestly, and with all respect to him, I can't understand his work on the Ark of the Covenant. He said he goes into a cave and there's an angel in there and there's a picture of an angel, and we put the camera up on a shelf or something like that. I'm probably really screwing it up, and I apologize to people that know. I just don't get it. And I saw the picture that he said was a picture of the Ark of the Covenant, and I looked at it, and I'm going, like I did with my grandkids in their, what do you call those, ultrasound things? I'm going, okay, where's the baby at in this picture?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And we got an Ark of the Covenant in there. And bless his heart, if he found it, I will be just as happy as if we find it. Because it's not about who finds it, it's that it's found.
Right.
Whether it's me, whether it's somebody else, I would be just as
good. Right. So. Yeah, absolutely. I agree with you. I think that it's the one thing that I wish Ron Wyatt just wouldn't have claimed, because I think he did a good other, I think he did good work on other stuff. And it definitely taints his view in the eyes of a lot of other people with the whole Ark of the Covenant thing. But I think you're right. It doesn't matter who finds it. I think it's important that it's found. So you mentioned timing, and this is something that's been so interesting because, again, last year we started reading some stuff from Michael Snyder. I don't know if you're familiar with him, but he does a blog, and he writes for a lot of stuff about end times prophecy and stuff like that. So one of the things he was talking about last year was something that I have been saying, which is, you know, once this whole Ukraine-Russia thing happens, it seems like there's a possibility, a high possibility, of a cascade of wars. And the wars that I said are likely after, you know, Russia and America in a proxy war, they're kind of fighting, but not really, would be China invading Taiwan, I thought would happen next. And then I thought Israel would get invaded. And I guess I was wrong on the order, but Israel did get invaded in October. And it seems like, again, one of the videos that I found this week, actually Abby sent it to me, and I can pull it up if we want to play it, but one of the things that got overlooked was that Hamas had quite literally said, we know about the red heifers. We know that Texas supplied 5 red heifers to the Temple Institute, that at least 4 of them are still, from what I understand, I think you told me that, I've heard a few other people who know, have said that there's still at least 4 red heifers who are unblemished, who are coming of age. The Passover is just over a month away, and there is at least a talk or the idea or plans to sacrifice one of the red heifers to bless the ephod that they have built. And all this stuff is a precursor to opening the temple. So having said all that, we speculated a little bit last year that if Israel gets invaded, I think it will have to do with all this stuff, that they're seeing what the Temple Institute has been very open about, that Hamas is not going to like the idea of them trying to do everything they can to recreate the Third Temple, which would necessitate, I believe, destroying the Dome of the Rock and rebuilding the temple on what is right now controlled by, you know, Islam's holiest site.
Right.
So again, with timing and all of that, with the attack, what's changed And with since the attack in October, what do you think that means? Do you think that Israel's going to not be as hesitant maybe to dig some of this stuff up because maybe they were avoiding a war or avoiding trying to cause a war before? Like, what's your take, or what do you what have you heard? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, and what I want you guys to understand, and put me in your conspiracy file, whatever you want to do, I don't care.
It's a conspiracy show. We can go as unhinged as you want. We can talk about aliens. We can talk about the Nephilim. We'll go into all that stuff if you want to. But
let's say go this, okay? What I know has happened. The copper scroll was found in 1952, and nobody's figured it out till I did it.
Mm-hmm.
That's bizarre. But what's even worse is the copper, the Dead Sea Scrolls are found in or recognized and being pulled out in 1947.
Right.
Right.
All those years, those scrolls were being absolutely suppressed. And there was one mega church that had control over it. And why did they have all the control over it? And why did they suppress all the information? Because that's our information. That's our God that put all this stuff together. Why are they the ones that control the information? And that is one of the biggest problems we have. And I don't think that's a conspiracy theory at all. That's a fact, Jack. They had that stuff. They wouldn't let us see it. The reason that the Dead Sea Scrolls were released is those guys that were in control of it allowed them to put together a concordance of the information that was in the Dead Sea Scrolls. That concordance made it possible were those guys to go in and piece together and put together the entire scrolls that they had they hadn't released, and then they had to release it. And mm-hmm. that was in 1991.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
So there's been a lot of knowledge suppressed, and I'm telling you, I can't go anywhere without saying there is a Satan in this world.
Yeah.
Yes.
There is a satanic being in this world. There is satanic spirits in this world. I'm going to stand by that till hell freezes over, because I'll be looking forward to that day. But it's real. This is real. And this stuff that's been happening. I mean, my buddies tell me this. Well, Jimmy, why do you study the Bible from a Jewish perspective? It's not a Jewish perspective. It's a biblical perspective. I do Shabbat. I do keep the feast days. And I have learned so much about Yeshua from keeping the feast days. It's just incredible.
Yeah.
And reading the Dead Sea Scrolls, if the Jewish people could see Yeshua from the Dead Sea Scroll perspective, they would go, okay, wait a minute. Wait. What is this? Because there are at least three very specific Dead Sea Scroll prophecies in there, and they're about Yeshua. And he is not a... The reason some of the Jewish people I talked to, I said, is one of the reasons that you don't give him the credit he deserves, I guess I should say, is because his name, you know what Jesus means? And if you love the name of Jesus, it's the greatest thing, you know, don't be offended. But I'm telling you, the name Jesus means son of Heus, Zeus.
Yeah.
Son of Zeus. Then my Jewish buddies go, whoa, no, thank you. They are not supposed to, and they're right. So all of this comes to a conspiracy theory of all this being suppressed, and it has been.
Mm-hmm.
If you know these items, and if you can study the Dead Sea Scrolls and see some of the things, that, and maybe sometime it will come back on here, and I'll show you. I'll show you these prophecies about the Dead Sea Scrolls, about this, and it makes Yeshua out to be ultra-Orthodox, because those guys at Qumran were the holiest men you can imagine. In the book of Josephus, Philo, Pliny, all those historians, they will give a little section about the Pharisees, a little bigger, a little smaller section about the Sadducees, but when they talk about the Essenes, it's an enormous amount.
We've both talked about the whole thing with the Essenes and how that links into like Second Temple writings and Enoch and things like that have just been kind of pushed to the side. Yeah. Yeah, sorry, but just go ahead.
I'm under the rug.
Yeah. I'm finding this very fascinating. I didn't mean to cut you off, but
No. I want you to say what you got to say, because I don't think keeping the commandments, the 613 commandments, are get you in heaven. I don't. Mm-hmm. But I tell you what they do is they create a biblical environment where your worship of God, your worship of what God wants for us, makes such a good environment for that, that it's easy.
But right.
Here's the thing. Me and my Jewish buddy were talking about this. I said, do you realize that if our Jewish brothers would have been in the synagogues on the day of the attack, October the 7th, if they had been in the synagogues where they're supposed to have been, because that's a day, I believe the date was called Simchat Torah. That's whenever they're starting the new cycle. They study the Bible in cycles. Mm-hmm. Had they been in the synagogues instead of out partying, it would have been a different story altogether. And I'm not knocking those people. What happened to them was hideous.
Right.
Horrible on a level I can't even begin to explain. But had they been in the synagogues studying instead of out doing that, it wouldn't have happened. It wouldn't have been this bad. It was horrible, and it still would have been bad. But let me tell you this, too. I was in Florida at Sukkot. It's the Feast of Tabernacles. I was in there. I was there, and I woke up. I usually wake up real early. I woke up about 3 o'clock in the morning, and I'm hearing all these radio announcements. I get, telegram, my signal, all that, and I read a lot of this stuff to stay on top. I told the people that when I got up to go have some coffee with them, I said, something's wrong. There's absolutely no reason that all these people died from Palestinians right next door to them. Right. How did their security system fail to this level? And how did all these responses get delayed for such a long time? And all these people died from that.
Right.
There's something seriously wrong with this picture, guys. And I'm not going to point any fingers yet, but I'm getting ready to.
We both speculated. Sorry, me and Abby, my co-host, is not here tonight. We both actually speculated and spoke about this exact thing. I think we did an episode for our Unhinged, just like one of our Behind the Paywall episodes, where we laid it out. It's like, this makes no sense. They have all the phones in Palestine tapped. They've got like the border wall. They've got this. They've got this, and this. And they did this three-prong attack, and all three prongs worked: air, sea, and land. And it was obviously really, really well coordinated. I mean, you don't have to give your theory if you don't want to. My theory at the time was essentially, I think that they invited in the attack because I think that they wanted this to come to a head. When I say they, sorry, I should specify, I mean like Mossad, like the intelligence agencies and stuff like that. Because to me, it felt like something that our CIA in America would do. So I was just kind of reading it in that way. But it's crazy. There's something definitely weird there with how successful this attack was on October 7th. It just doesn't make sense.
Yeah. And I'm sorry to say, but I agree with you.
Yeah.
And I was talking to my coin buddy, and I told him, if that's true, those people that allowed this to happen to these children, to these young ladies, let's just go down the list, to anybody that allowed this to happen to create a reason to attack, I'm sorry, that's wrong. It let them attack. And the massive size of the attack should have been enough
right.
to go in there and do what they had to do.
Right.
Yeah.
That's it. And maybe there's something I don't know. I can't imagine what it would be that would make you think, okay, let's let all these women get raped. Let's let all these little children get killed. Okay, that should be enough. Let's go ahead and do something. Mm-hmm. That's just bizarre. I'm with you on that.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree. I think it was definitely invited in and allowed in. I mean, I don't know what your thoughts are on 9/11, but I feel the same way about 9/11. I feel like that was, allowed and things like that, staged to some degree at least. But, there's no way, and we've done the episodes, but there's no way that NORAD just happens to be turning off all the signals because they're running the same simulation on that day without some coordination from the United States government. That's kind of my, I'll leave that there, different episode, but we don't have to get into it. But, yeah, man. So what, there's so many, Elise, go ahead and ask a question because my mind is reeling right now. I've got so many directions I want to go and so many questions I want to ask. And I also, I feel like for people in chat, if you have a question, I see that Rumble's not working super well right now. So a lot of people are moving over to YouTube. We're not going to shut off YouTube tonight like we normally would. Rumble's doing some updates, I guess. So we'll be on both places even after we end the main segment for the audio listeners and we go into asking questions. But if you can, send some questions in. We'll ask Jim some questions at the end. You also do biblical chronology, and would you mind talking about that a little bit and what that means and how that's linked into like your interest with the Dead Sea Scrolls and stuff like that? Because I've heard you say some very interesting things about, I want to get this right, so forgive me if I'm messing this up a little bit. After the 49 weeks of, I'm already screwing it up. The weeks of years that are talked about in Daniel, you had said something about how there's a line about it being tenfold onto Babylon, or am I getting this right? I'm curious about this. Is that ringing a bell?
Well, it's incredibly butchered, but I think I know.
I don't even know. I don't even know how to ask the question that I want to ask. So I was hoping that I said enough buzzwords that you would save me.
I think what you're referring to is what's called the Melchizedek Scroll.
Thank you. Yes.
Yes.
The Melchizedek Scroll is it's not a full document, but there's enough there that you go, oh my gosh.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of the ones that I go, guys, look, you see that? It's talking about the crucifixion. And you don't, ultra Orthodox, with their understanding at this point about Yeshua and what he has done and what he's doing, they can't be. Well, I'm not going to argue with that because that's not my place to convince them. What I'm going to do is put the information out that I've got about the Dead Sea Scrolls, because my understanding of Yeshua is what I've got from the Dead Sea Scrolls and a majority of it, of course, from what we consider the New Testament. There's just one Testament, in my opinion. Excuse me. What did you hear? Here's the deal. It begins by talking about the Jubilees. I'm going to do this real loosely. It begins talking about the Jubilee, and it even starts quoting from Isaiah, the same scriptures that Yeshua read in the synagogue. I'm telling you, the day that he read those scriptures, it was on a Shabbat, because that's what he was at. Where he's at, he was in on the Shabbat. He's in there, and all of the feasts fall on the same day of the week, same day of the month, same day of the year in the Dead Sea Scrolls. It's incredibly. I could tell you. Every holiday, what week it's going to be, what day it's going to be, by using their calendar. It's just phenomenal. And God is not the author of confusion.
Right.
Well, you read some of the calendars that they've got today, it's very confusing. The Jewish calendar is very confusing. No disrespect, but it is. Now, what it is, it gives a date, and I'm going to oversimplify this. It says that from this point in history, the destruction of the temple, and that's a very fixed date, and you go down 9 jubilees, and at the beginning of the 10th jubilee will be the time of the cutting off of the Messiah, or crucifixion, murdering of the Messiah. And his name... I'm trying to get this right. Blessed are the feet of the prophet that proclaims Yeshua. It even gives his name.
Wow.
And it gives the date of the crucifixion, and it is spot on. And I'm going, oh my gosh. And it talks about the priest blessing the people. There are seven Greek words in the Copy Scroll. Those seven Greek words, when you retranslate them, and I'm not going to go into that because it's a little confusing, but when you retranslate them from Greek back to Hebrew, from Hebrew into English, it says that the priest, in the sixth age, a priest shall give drink for the people in the wilderness. And it is a endearing statement. And he's saying that the priest that they're talking about, listen, the whole thing that they're talking about in this small scroll is the Melchizedek order. Have you ever heard of that?
A little bit, yeah.
Yes.
Oh my goodness. The Melchizedek order is huge. Huge. And nobody knows anything about it. It is incredibly important. Let me give you an example, and let me finish on the prophecy. It tells when the crucifixion would be, and I'll show you. Maybe what we could do is we'll set up a little ahead of time, however you want to do it, and I'll show you. I use Zoom to teach with. I can show you on this thing and give you exactly when all this stuff happened, because what I did many years ago, I was still a firefighter. I had a 30-foot scroll. It was butcher paper, 30 feet long, and I drew lines on it. And I'm very anal, too, by the way. And I've ticked up, marked off every eighth of an inch was a year for 6,000 little marks all the way down through there. And I plotted all this on there, and I began to notice, oh, my gosh, this is all working out perfectly. If you use the biblical dating, all of the prophecies worked out wonderfully.
Mm-hmm.
For some reason, they choose to use the doggone college and all these guys. They're not.
You're saying is they're like, I know the Bible says that from this guy to this guy is this many years, but we're too smart to just take it at its word. And then we screw it up, right? Like that's essentially what they're doing, right?
Yeah. And there's a lot of other things, too.
Yeah.
The year the temple was destroyed, that 586 BC, that's so far off, it ain't even funny. Well, anyway, putting it back into the biblical perspective, you got to use biblical dating. Wow. Everything falls into place. And I did this not to prove anything, not for any reason. All I wanted to do was figure out what prophet was with, which king, mm-hmm. which king was, all these events that took place. That's the reason I did that. And oh my goodness, it turned into something huge, much bigger than I ever imagined.
Right.
So
that's incredible. And I've always been fascinated with the dating and the calendars and the timeline. And to me, I've always felt like I've been easily overwhelmed by it, which is an excuse that I shouldn't use, but I do. And I think that's also intentional to some extent that these things, not from a biblical perspective, but just maybe,
from an academic perspective, though, it definitely is like this is I'm sorry, I want you to finish your point, but like we've talked about this a lot. And like one of my favorite authors is C.S. Lewis. And the reason I think he's so fascinating is because he will take high level, like college graduate level ideas and translate them into blue collar ideas. And the academics hate him because that's all he does. He just takes really smart stuff and says it in a way that a truck driver like myself can be like, wow, that's important. That's significant. Like that I don't have a college degree and I understand C.S. Lewis. That makes them mad because they want it in their own language. So I think you're exactly right, Elise. When it comes to biblical academics, it's the same problem as everywhere else. It's the same pride problem that Jim's talking about with the archaeologists, the same pride problem that we have everywhere else. It's not, they don't want people to know truth. They don't want discoveries to be found. They want their name on it and they want to be smarter and better than you. And it's more, the pride is more important than the discovery. The pride is more important than knowing where the Ark of the Covenant is or understanding biblical chronology or any of that. At least that's my belief. But you were saying, I mean, that's what you're saying, right?
Yes, and there's more to it than that. Let me give you an example. There was a black gentleman in the early late 1800s. He came up with some brilliant ideas for medical equipment, mm-hmm. brilliant ideas. And they wouldn't allow him credit for it because he hadn't graduated from their schools, and he had a tough time convincing them because here's the thing. just like the Pharisees, Sadducees at Yeshua's time. They did not want him to be seen as the Messiah. Why is that? It's because all of their power and authority would have went in the toilet at that point. Because now they've got a king, a righteous king, that, you know, would have ruled the world perfectly. Mm-hmm. So, and the thing about it is, all you got to do is look at the general survey of the authorities there. Who was the king at the time of Yeshua's crucifixion? Or certainly at his birth. It was King Herod.
Herod, yeah.
King Herod, was he a Jew? No.
No.
He was a Edomite. So why was he in power? And why were these non-Jewish men in authority over the temple, the high priest? They were not Jews. Weren't Jewish people. They weren't. They're supposed to have been Levites. Levites, right. And Kohanim. Yeah. Kohen, priests. And into a
political position rather than...
It was. So power, that's one of the biggest problems we have is if you graduate from... I don't know, bread and butter youth. Let's say you graduate from there and you deviate from what they teach, what happens? You get into some trouble.
Yeah.
They don't want you going against their team because if you prove them wrong, there goes a big chunk of their credibility.
Right.
So that's the same. And that's why those guys were so angry with me is I was proving things that, you know, it took away from their credibility. But this guy was calling me all those terrible names, and now he's going, well, now I didn't mean that. I mean, it's a methodology that I disagree with. Well, that's not what he was saying.
Okay, yeah.
You know, years ago.
Right.
So, yeah, but if you'd like, I will send you a copy of my timeline.
I would love that.
Yeah, no, for real. That would be great. And this is a good time to remind everybody too, if you guys are watching, if you're new to the show or anything like that, we have a Discord community and the link is in the description. It's on solo.to/conspiracypilled, anywhere you can find all of our stuff. But stuff like that, we definitely always are trying to share in there and have conversations. So after the show, if you want to get more information like that and ask questions and have conversations post show, Discord's really the place to be. People are in there constantly talking about all this stuff. We've got channels for Nephilim. We got channels for political conspiracies and everything you can think of, biblical stuff. So just a little shout out about Discord, but no, that would be awesome to see that. And I would love to share it with the community and continue this conversation.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Do you do lessons on how you do your Bible studying?
That's a good question.
Would take that up too.
honestly, Bible study is, and I can't explain it. Because when I went into it, documentation is key. Mm-hmm. If you're an investigator, documentation is key. If you're a scientist, documentation. If you're a nurse, documentation. If you didn't document it, you didn't do it.
Didn't happen.
And that's just the way it is. And that's the problem I had with Ron. Is he didn't. There was no documentation on the blood that was supposedly on the ark. And again, no disrespect for him, right? But you got to have that documentation.
Right.
So, and that's what I did. Is I tried to document everything when I studied it and document it. And let me tell you something. The book of John, it's been shuffled. I'm telling you, the whole thing has been shuffled. That sounds crazy, but I can prove it to you. Not tonight. Too much work, but there's a lot of really, really wonderful stuff out there.
That would be definitely an interesting one when Abby's feeling better to follow up on and stuff like that. Because I do find that so interesting. You've got the three synoptic gospels of Matthew, Mark, and Luke, and then you've got John, which is got, you know, it adds to it, but it's got some variation. I'm curious about that. About, you know, I'm not going to get into it right now because you said it's a whole nother thing, but I would be very interested to hear more about it.
I'm sure.
So before, we got about 15 minutes left, I think, before we're going to head over and just answer questions. So again, that's a reminder for everybody who wants to ask questions of Jim. Start typing them out. We'll try to save them. If you're watching, Elise, try to grab some too, and I will as well. I guess what I would like to ask is, where do you think things go for? I know you said... We kind of got onto it a little bit earlier about the red heifers and the cave and the ashes. I think someone in chat asked, they had thought that they already had the ashes of the nine previous red heifers, but I didn't think that was true. Right.
I, I've studied this stuff all the time, and no,
okay,
they're looking for those, and,
right?
And maybe it's because of what I said about it being inside the cave at Qumran. Maybe that's where I came from.
Okay,
but we haven't looked at them though.
Right. So, I guess my question is, like, where do you think it goes from here? Do you think that excavation's going to start up again soon? Do you think that this conflict with Hamas, or the, especially if the red heifers are sacrificed and the ephod is blessed next month, do you think that that's going to, change the timeline? I mean, because I definitely agree with you. God's hand and his timing is in all of this. And I want to give a quick shout out to one of our listeners. I know him as Cody, but Calamitous Worm in our Discord. He's the one who the other day was like, "Hey, PJ, do you know who Jim Barfield is?" I was like, "Yeah, I know who he is. I've thought about having him on the show." And he's like, "Well, I'll just give him your number." And I was like, "Oh, okay." And just like within a few hours, you and me were on the phone and had this whole thing set up, which that's another God thing. Cause, again, it worked out perfectly with Abby being sick and Elise got to join. And, this is just something that I've been very interested to follow up on, especially because me and Abby have personally been talking about all this stuff a lot lately. So, all that to say, like, do you think that, what do you think the timeline is? What do you see coming in the next, little while, as far as the copper scrolls and the temple and the red heifers and just all of it?
If in fact they do sacrifice the red heifer, I mean, that's huge.
Right.
That is massively huge. And actually, I know the guy, Byron Stinson, that put this all together and worked with the rabbis to find kosher heifers for this actual sacrifice. Great guy. Really like him. And it's amazing how many people that I've met, they're involved in this, and they're the same type of guys that, we're wanting to see God's will be done on this planet like it's supposed to be. And people ask me, "Well, why are you doing all this?" And it's an easy answer. I got grandkids, and I just got a great grandkid of all things. And I want them to grow up in a kingdom and a world, 1,000 years of peace. And with a righteous king in charge, because the knuckleheads that are in charge of our country and Israel, just knuckleheads.
Yeah.
And I'm using kind and precious language.
But that's very kind of you. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. So I think that we're very close.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, and this is a wild guess, but I'm going to tell you anyway. You ask, I think before the end of the year that I think we're going to be able to go to Israel and do what we need to do to finish this up. Looking at the that timeline I was telling you guys about, it's every one of the temples that were established where they put a new every cornerstone, it was always 10 years after a Jubilee period started.
Mm.
King Solomon's, the one with King Herod's. There was another one, but there wasn't a new. It's why I didn't believe they don't count it as a temple, a new temple, is because they use the same cornerstone.
Mm-hmm.
So what I think is going to happen is Trump, whenever he proclaimed the new year, the capital of Jerusalem or Israel.
Right. It was 2017. Am I getting that right?
Yeah. That was exactly in the middle of a very special Jubilee cycle. And real quick, Adam was born in a very special Jubilee cycle. Adam, Isaac, 40 Jubilees later, very special Jubilee cycle. And then 40 Jubilees after that, exactly, was another Jubilee cycle. Yeshua was in this one, and 40 Jubilees after that, guess what? We're in it. We're in that same special Jubilee cycle. So if it remains constant, a Messianic figure with Adam, a Messianic figure with Isaac, Messianic with Yeshua, and we're in a Messianic Jubilee cycle, why not? Why wouldn't this be a perfect time? Because the 6,000 years, guys, it's up. It's up. The right. Shabbat, the Sabbath that that God told us to keep. That's why, is because every day, 1,000 years today, on the seventh day, we go into a Shabbat, a rest. And yes, I'm sure so looking forward to that.
Yeah, for people who don't understand, I think what you're saying, and this was said, we've mentioned this episode before, Blurry Creatures recently did one with the guys with the red heifers. And what they said is that it says in the Bible, a day is like a thousand years is as a day to Christ, or to God. And we're at 6,000 years. I think that's why they so badly want to mess with the chronologies, with our understanding of history and how old the earth is and things like that. Because if you read it very literally, it looks like we're getting to the end of that 6 days. And the Bible promises us a 1,000-year millennial reign, which sounds like exactly like you're saying, 7 days to God, you know, 6,000 years of this and 1,000 years of peace. So very, I think that very sounds interesting too stuff.
Simple. And but if we've learned anything here, that it can't be simple. So
this is why I love it, because that thought, like when I heard it said on Blurry Creatures a few weeks ago, I was like, I've thought that since I was a kid. I've always thought that. Like I always thought, yeah, the Bible says 1,000 years. It seems like after 6,000 years, we'd get, you know, a Sabbath. And I just thought, I'm just a kid. Right. This is too simple. I'm reading the Bible too plainly. But I think that that's so important. It's something me and Abby talk about a lot. It's like, if it's a plain reading of the text says something, it's probably a plain reading of the text. It probably doesn't need a cipher and, you know, a bunch of PhDs, because this was written for everybody. So,
excellent.
Yeah. Well, Jim, it's been absolutely awesome having you here. We're going to end this portion for the audio listeners. So if you guys listen to the show, please come over to Rumble, catch this show live. Go to plug your thing really quick, and then I'll lead us out. Where can people find you, Jim?
They can go to my website. But guys, because of the importance of what I'm doing and the incredible wealth that's there, I don't post very much at all, because I have to keep things quiet.
Sure.
If Israelis call me and talk to me, I can't tell people about that.
Sure.
I have to keep everything quiet, because it's just like the red heifers. They keep them under wraps because they know that those animals are at risk of being slaughtered. And I promise you, those kinds of things are out there. So, and the same thing with what we're doing. We don't want anything to happen. I don't care about the publicity. What I want is to get this done.
Right. Yeah. So
Thank you for coming on and
go ahead, Elise.
Educating everybody. I appreciate it. Thank you for just like filling us all in. Because you were saying this before we started that unfortunately not a lot of people know about this and about what you found. So thank you for taking the time to educate us and bring the listeners up to speed on all of it too. So.
Yeah.
Well, it was just great talking to you.
It's an absolute pleasure. You guys have made it very nice and enjoyable. And I love talking to people who are truly interested. Mm-hmm. I just love it. So anytime you guys want me to come back or you want to just talk about it, I'm here.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Jim. And for people listening, is it the Copper Scroll, thecopperscrollproject.com? Is that the website where they can find information? Mm-hmm. Okay. Awesome. So yeah, no, seriously, it was great. I would love to continue this conversation. I'd love to have you back at some point. I'm excited to hear what people in the audience are asking. I want to say, like, I've listened to a lot of your interviews, and one of the things I was hoping we did, and I think we did it well, was for people, and the audience will let us know, for people who are not familiar in this stuff, I feel like a lot of people are talking past and over their heads. So thanks for letting us, you know, pick your brain, ask stupid questions, letting me ask some stupid questions and embarrass myself a little bit. But I hope it translated well to everybody else. So yeah, we're gonna head over to a Rumble only section again, but Rumble's kind of down tonight, so we'll leave it up for everybody. But my point is, if you're listening to this, come catch a live show on a Wednesday night at 7. Come support us on conspiracypill.locals.com. Join us tomorrow night for a bonus unhinged episode. Pray for Abby. She should be back for it. She's pregnant and has COVID, so pray for her. That's not a fun place to be. High fever and all of that. But until next time, everyone, God bless.